Support for Central Florida Public Media comes from Addition Financial, offering their Savings Plus account with a 4% annual percentage yield. Serving Central Floridians since 1937 and was recently named one of Newsweek's best regional credit unions. More at additionfi.com/NPR. Applicable on savings up to $5,000. Rate subject to change, federally insured by NCUA.
Exploring the spooky side of space on this Halloween. You're listening to Are We There Yet? The radio show exploring space exploration. Hi, I'm Brendan Byrne. 'Tis the season of terror, and in the cosmos, many eerie mysteries await us. From the haunting specter of stars from the past to supermassive black holes lurking in the depths of our universe. Surely a guide could help us find the way among all of these cosmic horrors. Luckily, we've got the perfect team for it. We're speaking with the hosts of the Walk About the Galaxy podcast about the scariest cosmic phenomena. That's ahead on Are We There Yet? What's an astronaut's favorite Halloween candy? Mars bars, of course. I know, grown now, I promise you, that's it for the Halloween jokes. Let's get back to business. An infinite universe also means infinite possibilities, some of which can be spine-chilling. We're not talking about ghosts and zombies, but of course, comets, dead stars, and lurking black holes. We're here to tell us more about what to watch out for are Josh Caldwell, Addie Dove, Jim Cooney, and Audrey Martin. They're physicists at the University of Central Florida and hosts of the podcast Walk About the Galaxy.
I tasked you all with finding something spooky and scary for this Halloween episode, and I know you will not disappoint. Who wants to kick it off?
There's all sorts of scary things in space.
Okay.
From near to far.
I'm going
to
start near.
Okay.
With very simple Chicken Little scary stuff of the sky is falling.
Okay.
Oh, no.
Very, very easy for things to come and fall and hit us on the Earth, and very, very bad things would happen.
Like what?
Comets.
Okay.
Asteroids.
Those aren't that common, though, right? Are they?
Well, it depends on your time scale.
Okay.
So,
I think I've seen that movie.
Yes, as in the masterpiece from 1998, Deep Impact. So we're doing a lot of searches to see these potentially hazardous objects, as they're known, so that we're kind of mapping out, and we know that, like, no, there's not going to be an asteroid coming in and hitting the Earth in the next several decades. Comets, however, are a little bit less predictable because there's a vast repository of comets in the outer solar system whose orbits we don't know, we can't see directly. They can get perturbed into the inner solar system and come cruising in, and then we would have a very short warning.
That sounds terrifying.
Yeah, and then very, very bad things would happen. If something falls, you know, you don't need a bomb. Just the kinetic energy of one of these objects coming in and hitting the Earth is incredibly destructive. So,
because it's moving very fast.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be that big. I mean, you think of something that's like maybe miles wide that's hitting, but it can be stuff that's much, much, much smaller, like a car-sized thing slamming in really, really fast.
That'll ruin your day. If it hits you, but even, say, so for example, an asteroid that's the size of a football stadium comes in, that's
Which
not
one?
Huge.
Just kidding.
And that has about 50 megatons of TNT equivalent. So about 1,000 times the destructive energy of the Hiroshima atomic bomb from a very tiny asteroid coming in. So that's a lot.
Brendan looks terrified. You know, good job, Josh.
If you want to make it a little bit spookier, we could also have aliens involved.
Ooh.
Okay.
Right? Are they perturbing orbits?
They're perturbing orbits, right?
Ooh.
So in science,
I regret doing this segment.
Mine isn't going to be this scary.
In science fiction, aliens usually have all sorts of dastardly devices to wreak havoc and destruction on the planet. But all they have to do is like lob stuff down on us from up above.
And we're in trouble.
They just got to drop things.
You mentioned with these comets, we wouldn't have much time to know that they were coming. How much time are we talking about here?
We're talking still probably a year or more, depending on the size of the object.
To really understand what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
Enough time to have time to go through all of the stages of panic, but really not be able to do anything about it yet.
If it's very small, it might be less time, but
the bigger ones we'll see a little bit further out.
Once a comet gets into the inner part of the solar system, even if it's not very big, it starts evaporating, and those ices make a big visible cloud, so we can track it and see it and have an idea of whether or not it's potentially coming our way.
So it's kind of showing off on its way to
that's right. It's like,
hey, and humanity.
Yeah. Hello, here I come.
Yeah. Well, are there efforts to track these? Obviously, there but are there better efforts that we can get more than a year out of this?
Well, for comets, I mean, I'm talking about Oort cloud comets in the very distant part of the solar system. Mm-hmm. Those are not visible. And with a comet,
they're small and they're dark and they're far
very, very far away. And also, it wouldn't do you that much good because once that comet comes in, those gases start evaporating. That acts like a little miniature rocket engine on the comet that diverts its trajectory.
Oh, so it makes it less predictable.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Exactly.
Yay. So the asteroids are much more predictable. They're also much more plentiful. So, you know, we are more likely to have an impact from an asteroid than a comet.
Yeah.
But we are also in a much better position to predict those and identify those risks, which we're doing.
Yeah. There's more and more telescopes going up every year looking specifically for potentially hazardous asteroids.
I feel like we need to get more up there.
Let's do it.
Well, speaking of more up there, Josh, could other things harm us here on Earth that are in orbit, like maybe space debris or something like that?
Yeah. There's a target area. What's it called in the Pacific, Addy, where they're going to deorbit the ISS? But there's, it's a concern because when things get deorbited, big stuff, it does come down in chunks. Mm-hmm. And we talked about on the podcast with Skylab, chunks were recovered in Australia and most of the planet, something comes down, it's not going to land on you. And most of those things aren't going to be coming in with the same destructive force as like a comet or an asteroid because they're going to slow down in the atmosphere more. They're not starting at the same speed that a comet or asteroid would be coming
in. So you wouldn't want to be directly under it when it's falling. Right. But if you're couple miles away, you're probably fine.
And a little more predictable than
There was this big thing about a re-entering stage from, I think, a SpaceX rocket that was like hadn't gotten into orbit properly from a while ago. And it was re-entering. And there was all this predictions about when it would come in and where it would come in. And I think they ended up seeing it up in the Pacific Northwest, like as it was re-entering. And it didn't cause, I think it did land in the ocean because fortunately most of the Earth is covered in ocean. But they do find debris that washes up.
And some of that debris is kind of pretty to see as it's making its way through the atmosphere,
Sure.
Would a comet that is about to end life as we know it here on Earth look just as beautiful?
Oh, spectacular.
It'd be wonderful.
It would be a heck of a show. Yeah. Spectacular.
And all the stuff, the little bits of it that have already come off ahead of it that are going to come in ahead of time will create a nice light show. Yeah.
Okay. Beautiful fireworks display.
So we have that to look forward to.
Exactly.
All right. Very terrifying, Josh Caldwell. Let's turn to Addie. To Audrey Martin for the next terrifying topic.
Yeah, so mine is a little bit related. It's a comet. It is not nearly as terrifying. It's definitely more on brand for, you know, a Halloween party for children or something like that. Like, that's the level of scary that we're going with.
It's less scary, but more spooky.
Sure.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. So there's a comet that is headed essentially towards us. It will not hit us.
Okay. Thanks for that preface.
Yeah. You're welcome. It's called Comet Pons-Brooks, and it has devil horns.
Ooh.
It's got these two horns coming off of it that have shown up about earlier this month, and this is the second time that it has developed devil horns. It got horns in July, and then they went away.
What is it made of? Talk to me.
Now,
Jim, what was that, Jim?
I'm saying, what are they made of? Talk to me.
What are these devil horns made of?
Well, what are horns made of? Just kidding. It's they're volatiles, so it's a comet, and the horns are made of what all comet tails are made of, and so
they're just horn tails.
The horns are made of all what tails are made of. Duh. I mean,
obviously. And usually, whenever a comet is outgassing, it will just kind of outgas in what we imagine is a tail. But on this comet, it has cryovolcanism, and it's periodically exploding. And
so it has ice volcanoes.
It has ice volcanoes, exactly, which is really spooky. there's an area on the surface of Pons Brooks that is obstructed or is really, really strong, so it isn't exploding. And so there's an area that isn't outgassing. And because of that, there are essentially what looks like kind of two tails, but the two tails look just like devil horns.
Very cool. So is this a rare phenomenon when it comes to these comets?
Absolutely. It totally is. And the comet is actually going to make its closest approach to Earth in April of next year. And it might be visible just with the naked eye. So, you know, everyone keep an eye out.
I like how it grows a second. This is its second set of horns?
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
What's the correct term? Comatologists? Who studies comets?
Cometary scientists.
I like a comatologist.
I like comatologists,
what could
too.
A comatologist learn from this?
They can learn a lot about the strength of a comet nucleus. So where the volatiles come from within the comet nucleus is still a big question. And so when we measure with spectroscopy or with other methods, the stuff that is coming off of these comets, we don't exactly know where within the comet they came from. And because we can see, okay, there's clearly these eruptions happening, but there's areas that are not erupting, we can infer something about the structure of the nucleus from that.
And we see comets sort of have tantrums and erupt at like various times and in various places a lot. Like comets often do that because they sort of are getting heated up and then they're like throwing stuff off. But this one's very interesting because it's got these two distinct features.
Exactly.
So the horns themselves, very scary. The surface of this comet sounds absolutely terrifying, if it's...
Oh, sure.
So what's happening on this comet? Oh, sure.
I mean, the surface of any comet is pretty terrifying. Yeah. There's no atmosphere or air. And that's scary.
So all of these things can just be happening on the surface?
CO2 ice. Mm-hmm. It's like a big dry ice ball, kind of.
Yeah.
It's just outgassing.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah. And rocks.
Yeah, the cryovolcanism is, it's heating up, and instead of internal energy with molten rock blasting through, you've got sunlight energy delivering heat into the interior and causing ices to explode through the surface.
Mm-hmm. Pretty unpredictable.
That sounds terrifying.
Yeah.
So very cool.
We're speaking with Josh Caldwell, Addie Dove, Jim Cooney, and Audrey Martin. They're physicists at the University of Central Florida and hosts of the podcast Walk About the Galaxy. Still to come?
I think the thing that's truly deeply scaring me about this is the concept of infinity. And in cosmology in recent years, the leading theories suggest that the universe will go on forever. And infinity is a scary concept.
Mm-hmm.
And an infinite period of time where it's just like nothing is happening, it's dead and uninteresting, is terrifying to me, like I said, in a deep existential way.
Our creepy conversation continues. That's ahead on Are We There Yet?
Support for Central Florida Public Media comes from Addition Financial, offering their Savings Plus account with a 4% annual percentage yield. Serving Central Floridians since 1937 and was recently named one of Newsweek's best regional credit unions. More at additionfi.com/NPR. Applicable on savings up to $5,000. Rate subject to change, federally insured by NCUA.
You're listening to Are We There Yet? I'm Brendan Byrne. For this Halloween episode, we're talking about the creepiest things in the cosmos. And to do that, we're speaking with Josh Caldwell, Addie Dove, Jim Cooney, and Audrey Martin. They're physicists at the University of Central Florida and hosts of the podcast Walk About the Galaxy. We've asked them to bring us their spookiest space topics, and our conversation continues.
Let's go over to Addie for your contribution to this spooky conversation.
All right, Brendan, what are you most terrified of?
Oh, black holes. You know that. Yeah.
So what's more terrifying than a regular supermassive black hole just in the middle of a galaxy?
Regular supermassive black. Nothing.
A rogue.
Wrong.
Wrong. A rogue supermassive black hole.
I hear Jim cackling on the line back there.
Very scary. I love it.
So there's been theories for a while that black holes could actually be ejected from the center of the galaxies in which they've been formed and just be sort of rogue in the universe. And they're basically then undetectable because they don't have enough material around them.
We need to stop this conversation.
They don't have enough material around them in the sort of diffuse interstellar medium to accrete gas. So you can't detect them with light. But there are other ways to detect them now.
I was going
to
say, how do we even know these things exist and you're just not making this up?
Sure. So for a while, we didn't. For a while, okay. We were just hypothesizing ways to scare you, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
But now there's been a few papers come out more recently that actually have what they call are detections of these black holes, and it's two different ways. So the first one is with what's called a lensing event, so a microlensing event. So black holes are very big and very massive, and so if they come in front of another star, like in between us and another star, the light from the other star gets bent, and we can see the light around that object. And then you can say, okay, there's this really big, massive object in between us and the star, and you can estimate how big and how massive. And this tells us it has to be something like a 7 solar mass black hole.
Are they moving? Do they move around?
They're moving.
A lot?
Oh my god!
So they're not only
fast. Are we talking about here?
So that one's only moving at about 45 kilometers per second through
only.
Space.
Okay. Yeah.
And that's probably because of the way it was ejected. Either when it formed, maybe it formed in a binary supermassive black hole event or a binary black hole event, and then got kicked out. Sometimes they get kicked out due to galaxy mergers. So mm-hmm. if you have two massive black holes at the center of a galaxy and the galaxies are merging, they'll spiral around a bunch and one of them can just get kicked out of the system.
Yeah.
So that was really scary. So that's a 7 solar mass black hole. There's also been a runaway supermassive black hole that's potentially been detected.
Okay, I need to know the difference between rogue and runaway. Are they the same thing?
They're the same thing.
Okay.
Yeah. They're not at the centers of galaxies. Okay. So we've detected them. They've gone rogue. They've run away. They're mm-hmm. out from where they should be. And this one was detected because basically it's left sort of a scar behind in the space that it's traveled through.
Oh.
And so in that scar, though, you have a lot of gas and stuff that's churned up. And sometimes you also then end up getting star formation because you have all this really chaotic motion. And so there's like a little trail of young stars that they've detected with Hubble.
Sort of streaking out of a galaxy.
Sort of
super cool.
Streaking out of a galaxy. Yeah.
Oh, very. That would look pretty.
It would look really nice, except then you're like, oh, wait, there's a rogue supermassive black hole leading the charge.
Yes. So there's beauty and destruction in the universe.
And that one's moving at about 1,600 kilometers per second.
Okay.
Oh, no.
So, like, I mean, I think Audrey's with me here.
Yeah. I don't think it's in our general direction, so we have time.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, what is in its wake and what is, like, I imagine black holes are like, you know, cosmic little Mr. and Mrs. Pac-Man just gobbling up stuff. Is that what they're actually doing, and including these roguing black holes
running away.
Yeah. I mean, so black holes sort of interact with everything around them, and it's kind of like a Pac-Man moving through things, but it's nice when they're outside of their galaxy, there's not a lot of dots for it to eat, right? So mm-hmm. you're sort of in the part of the map where you've already eaten the dots, and so there's not as much to eat, so you can't tell the Pac-Man is there.
Okay.
With this analogy. Oh. but when they're further out from their galaxies, they're just really hard to detect because we detect black holes not by seeing them because they're black, but by how they interact and all the heat from the material that's falling in that heats up and creates all sorts of jets and gas and stuff mm-hmm. like that we see. So when they're out roving solo, far away from the centers of galaxies, they're much, much, much harder mm-hmm. to find.
Sneakier. Yeah. Going to sneak up on you.
Yeah.
Which is the closest one to us? And do we have to be worried about this?
And how fast is it moving?
Yeah. Is it behaved?
The seven solar mass black hole is only 1.58 kiloparsecs.
Oh, wow.
So that's relatively close.
Okay, that scares me when Josh says, wow, that's next door. So,
yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Good.
Yeah. They're out trick-or-treating in your neighborhood.
They're in our neighborhood. All right. I've saved what I assume would be the most terrifying for last. Jim, hit me with it.
It's a hard follow-up, Jim.
My current mood is kind of existential dread.
Oh, good. Good.
Awesome.
And so what I've been worried about recently is, this is maybe silly to be worried about, is the heat death of the universe.
Ah, yes.
here's the thing. Say you're a vampire. I mean, I don't know. Every time I've seen Brendan over the last handful of years, he looks the same. So I don't think he's aging. I think he might be a vampire. Vampires are immortal, and they're going to live forever. You're then going to have to face the fact that if you wait long enough, everything in the universe is going to just halt. What I mean by that is,
terrifying.
This is really bad. Like it's cool to live for 100, 200, 300, 500 years. I don't know. But like, well, you live for 10 to the 100 years, you're going to find yourself in
lonely.
A really bad place. I don't know why. It bothers me a lot. I don't know. I asked my wife, what is the thing in astronomy that scares you most? She said the exact same thing, the heat death of the universe, which
oh,
is
wow.
That's why they're together.
That's really beautiful.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's essentially, and what we mean by that, I mean, this is an old concept, but it's gotten a new lease on life because, well, the concept is that, you know, if you wait long enough, everything in the universe basically comes into what we call thermodynamic equilibrium. Everything is at the same temperature. And it turns out when that happens, and that temperature is very, very low, when that happens, nothing interesting can happen anymore. All of the interesting, fun processes that happen in physics, work that's being done and exchanges of energy and all that happen because we're not in equilibrium.
In, once what we is get interesting? To equilibrium,
nothing can ever happen again.
You're
nothing
interesting, Audrey.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. I'm
stars
hearing,
are interesting.
I'm hearing none of this scary stuff can happen at the heat death.
Oh, Brendan's on board with this now.
Yeah, it's like it kind of sounds cozy.
Yeah.
It's very, very cold.
It sounds predictable.
It is all that. But imagine Brendan just floating out there in the middle of energy space. It's going to be a long, boring.
Vampire,
I mean, maybe this
Brendan.
Is more depressing than scary. But
yeah.
Depends on your take on scary.
Jim, how long until then? You mentioned some crazy math numbers that I can't wrap my head around.
So it's hard to say, but something like more than 10 to the 100th power years.
Okay.
So this
many,
is, you know,
many.
One with 100 zeros after it. And that's like the earliest this could happen. It could be much, much later than that. So you got a little time.
Mm-hmm.
But
at the same time, it's not like a switch is flipped. I mean, things are going to get kind of...
Yeah, you'll
slow.
You'll slowly get used to your sad,
the neighborhood
sad,
is going downhill
life.
Way before then.
Yeah, that is absolutely true. That is really true. I think the thing that's truly deeply scaring me about this is the concept of infinity. And in cosmology, in recent years, the leading theories suggest that the universe will go on forever. And infinity is a scary concept.
Mm-hmm.
And
sure.
An infinite period of time where it's just like nothing is happening, it's dead and uninteresting is terrifying to me, like I said, in a deep existential way.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it gives Audrey some comfort.
I love it.
Well, Jim, as a cosmologist, like I know, you know, we've talked about this on the show many times that, you know, you are learning so much more about these processes like gravitational waves and seeing these, you know, actually getting images of black holes. Like, is it scarier knowing that these things that you are hypothesizing are actually real at this point?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'll be honest. I was very concerned when Addy was talking about these rogue black holes, because really, like when you asked, where's the closest one? We have no idea is the terrifying
answer.
Yeah, right?
Oh, that is true. Yeah.
Yeah. The fact that that they are real and it's. Yeah. I mean, like my mother still doesn't believe in black holes, but they are real. They are out there. And yeah, and in cosmology, I mean, you know, the universe is going to have some crazy end. I don't know what it is exactly, but it's, anyway, mm-hmm. terrifying.
All so
terrifying.
As a vampire, it would be scary.
It would be scary, yes.
Yeah, yes. So, Brandon, you should be scared.
I should be absolutely freaked out. Let's go back to the rogue black hole again. if one were to pop up, would we know that it would be around? Or would we just be gobbled up and have to be like, oh, crap, what was that?
Well, we would start to see things further out in the galaxy even and further out in the solar system interacting with it.
Yeah.
I mean, meeting their demise before we would get gobbled up.
So it's not just going to pop up out of nowhere.
No.
Well, it'll pop up.
Well,
it might.
The cosmologist says it might.
We'll learn about its existence from its effect on other things, right?
Okay. Yeah.
And so then the question is just like, what route is it taking to get here? How big is it? And
how fast is it?
And,
oh, yeah, what direction?
What are the things around it that it is maybe interacting with or not to know whether or not it's going to pop up or sneak up or cruise by?
Hmm.
Yeah, I think the scariest one are those kind of the ones that he was first talking about, those like kind of smaller sized ones, like 10 times the mass of the sun or something, because those things, they could sneak right up to the solar system and you'd never know, because the random path through the galaxy is not a path that interacts with very much.
That's what I thought you were going to say.
Yeah.
That's terrible, because those things could come right in and then the first thing you'd see is maybe the orbits of the outer planets aren't doing what they're supposed to do or something like that. And then all of a sudden they're gone.
Keep an eye on those outer planets.
I'm making a note to check the orbits of the outer planets on a weekly basis at this point.
Yep.
Okay, this is terrifying. Let's change the tone a bit. We're almost at the end of the year. What are you guys most excited about in your fields over the next year or so? I'm going to start with you, Jim. I'm going to put you on the spot.
Oh, my. That's tough. So I'm excited about the continuing developments in gravitational wave detection. So we're just at the beginning of that. And obviously, we've been talking about that for, I don't know, the last 4 or 5 years now, but it's we're getting better and better, and we're about to put new gravitational wave observatories out in space. And so it won't be exactly 2024 that we see that, but there will be many developments in that realm this year. And I'm super excited about this new avenue of understanding the universe.
But aren't those detected by, you know, those are black holes colliding? That sounds terrifying, right?
Oh, no, those are very, very, very
okay,
terrifying.
So the reason of the okay.
Very far away.
But very okay. far away very for far those. Away. Okay. Yeah. Very and far we can away. See them, so it's
we can
great.
See yeah. the glass half full. All right, Audrey, yeah. what are you most excited about?
I'm really excited about all of the missions that are going to asteroids, especially asteroids that are further out in the solar system. There have been a lot of just asteroid missions to near-Earth objects, and now we're going further and further and further. We're going to visit the Trojans. We're going to Psyche. The UAE has a mission proposed to do another tour in the main belt, and we're going to get to study a whole bunch of asteroids close up.
Yeah.
I'm really excited
Psyche
about
mission's
that.
Psyche mission's very exciting.
Yeah.
Very
yeah.
exciting a lot.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Josh?
I'm excited about more and more and more exoplanets.
Yes. Oh, and, man, those are cool, aren't
yeah,
they?
Yeah. So I'm loving the exoplanet discoveries. I'm loving that now where it's not just discovering them, but learning something about them and what they're made of, and especially what their atmospheres are made of. Mm-hmm. And I'm like clinging to the hope that we will see an unmistakable signature of life in the atmosphere of some other planet. Mm-hmm. That's my counter to the existential dread, because I really want to see that. Even if we'll never meet them, and even if they're just alien algae, I will sleep a little bit better at night knowing that they're out there.
Yeah, it's terrifying and comforting at the same time, right? To know that there is something out there, but to know that we're not alone.
As long
right?
as they don't yeah. fly over here and start dropping rocks
stuff
on us.
That you mentioned at the start. Yes. Right. Thanks, Josh. And Addie, well,
I am excited about the upcoming lunar missions. So yes. there's a bunch of robotic missions that are, knock on wood, finally going to happen. So these are sort of commercial missions that are preceding a bunch of the Artemis landed missions, and we're going to start going to new areas on the moon and start getting landing on the moon again. Mm-hmm. So I'm really excited about those.
Mm-hmm. Well, I am super excited for the future. I was terrified before, but I'd rather Yay. Be terrified and scared with my friends. So thank you all for coming in. We've been speaking with Josh Caldwell, Addie Dove, Jim Cooney, and Audrey Martin. They are physicists at the University of Central Florida and hosts of the podcast Walk About the Galaxy. Thank you all for coming in. This was a lot of fun.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Brandon.
Be sure to check out the Walk About the Galaxy podcast. You can get it wherever you get your podcasts. And if you get this podcast on Spotify, we've got a poll going. What was the spookiest topic we discussed today? Well, we want to hear from you. Be sure to check it out on this episode's page in the Spotify app and cast your vote. And our intern, Alessandro, has a wrap-up of all the spooky phenomena on our website. Visit wmfe.org/arewetherayet. And are you freaked out about those asteroids we talked about at the start of this conversation? Well, next week, we'll talk with a NASA scientist about efforts to track these things before they get scary close to Earth. So stay listening. That's going to do it for this week's show. If you're not already, be sure to subscribe to the show's podcast feed so you never miss an episode. Do that on NPR One, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. We got more space coverage online. Visit wmfe.org/space. Are We There Yet is a production of 90.7 WMFE News. Our producer is Marion Summerall. Our intern is Alessandro Bonaiuto. Editorial guidance from Latoya Dennis. Support for Are We There Yet comes from our listeners. Until next week, I'm Brendan Byrne, and remember, keep it spooky.